Hello there, everybody. Welcome back to the Dory Monson Show. Live in the Carter Subaru Studio. I'm Jason Rance, filling in for Dory today. If you want to join the conversation at any point over the course of the next 2 hours, send your hate text, your love text, all of your texts. Keep the pictures to yourself. 98973. It's the Online Trading Academy text line. 98973. There's a new report out, Ursula Royteen, suggesting that the 20 safest cities in Washington State are mostly based on the greater east side, which is kind of awesome when you think about it, because all the time...
When you say east side, like east side...
The greater east side of Western Washington. So
okay.
I'll go through the list in a second.
Okay.
The one city that's not on this list in the top 20, of course, is Seattle.
Mm.
And that's good news for a lot of people who live outside of Seattle, because we kind of get annoyed, anyone who lives outside of Seattle, that Seattle is how you define the entire region.
Mm-hmm.
And what you don't want to have happen is the entire region get defined by the craziness of what happens in Seattle, whether we're talking about crime or we're talking about just the crazy ideas that come out of Seattle. So this company, Safewise, they looked at FBI crime stats for violent crimes and for property crimes, and they compared it to the general population number. And they came up with a percentage of how many people per 1,000 residents have some sort of interaction in a violent way or a property crime.
Okay.
And I got the list. You want to go over it with me?
Sure.
Because you know a lot of these places, too. I think you live in one of these spots. Number 10 is Mill Creek. Number 9, Liberty Lake. Number 8, Lake Forest Park. Then Cedro Woolley Camas. Top 5 is Linden, Newcastle, Sammamish, Mercer Island. And I'll give you the number 1. But though, Sean, can you give me a drum roll for this, please? No, not conga. Like an actual drum roll that's a little bit more appropriate for an unveiling, please. Please? Okay, cool. He's getting it right.
I was kind of getting into that.
Here's the number 1.
Okay.
This is the safest city in Western Washington. That answer is... Well, give me the ding. Okay. The answer is...
Yes?
Are your arms not tired, Sean?
Not yet.
Oh, my... Okay. And the number 1 safest city is... How long are you going?
I like drumming.
Okay.
That's pretty impressive.
But this is just way too long, because I'm already... No, I wasn't ready for that. Snoqualmie. Snoqualmie is number 1 safest city. They have a 0.22% per... 0.22 people per 1,000 residents gets involved in any kind of violent crime. And I love that. I love actually highlighting all the places outside of Seattle, because I'm getting more... And look, I live in Seattle, and I don't...
So do I.
I know, but well... Live on the outskirts of Seattle.
No, I live smack in the middle of Seattle.
What's your address?
I live in Northeast Seattle.
What's your cross streets?
70. I'm not going to say.
What's your social security number? You almost
but
gave me your cross street.
I live right in the middle of Seattle, and I'm happy to do so.
I will say this. As much as we talk about the crime in Seattle, and we certainly see our fair share of crime in Seattle, let's all just take a deep breath and say it's not that bad. We're not in a city where we're seeing murders every single weekend like you do in Detroit or Chicago or anything. Like, this is a city that is overwhelmingly, overwhelmingly safe. Now, it doesn't mean, and I don't mean to discount some of the crime that we see, right? It's incredibly annoying and impactful when someone breaks into your home or breaks into your car.
Yes.
Like, we do not want to see that happen. And that happens at an alarming rate in the Seattle area.
Or you also don't want to be accosted by someone who is
totally
completely drug addicted, and it makes you feel unsafe.
Yeah,
even
half
if
of that
maybe
is the perception.
Exactly. Maybe the statistics don't bear out.
And that's my point. There is a perception that even in Seattle, it is much more dangerous than it actually is. And I feel like some people, when I make that claim, when I make that statement, you go, oh, well, you're downplaying the issue and it means you don't want to fix the problems. No, I want to fix the problems just as much as anybody else because it impacts me. Right. There was a break into my apartment complex just a few weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
And so I totally get it.
Yeah. Car prowls in my neighborhood. Definitely
it's
up.
Crazy.
Yeah.
But let us not pretend that we live in some gang infested city in a gang infested region. We don't. We're lucky that we don't. It doesn't mean that there aren't a lot of problems that we need to fix. In fact, there are a ton of problems we need to fix.
Yes.
But let's all just relax. And you have a relaxing voice, and I just had you stick around because I'm dealing with anxiety because filling in for Dory Monson is kind of a big deal.
You know, you kind of popped in there when I was talking about that story about anxiety. And even though you're kind of joking around, it is no laughing matter. If you have an anxiety attack, you think you are having a heart attack.
I mean, no, not really.
Well, I mean, for some people,
yeah,
absolutely. And
you know what I think when I have a panic attack? That I'm having a panic attack. Although
well,
that's good for me because I recognize what's happening.
I was going to say, because you've been diagnosed, but prior to the time you were diagnosed, you may have thought you had some serious
To be fair, I've been diagnosed by WebMD, which also tells me I have cancer,
a brain tumor.
Like, it has everything. I go in and I tell WebMD, I've got a cough. I think you might have HIV or brain cancer. I'm like, but I just have a cough, WebMD. What are you doing to me? They're the ones who give me anxiety.
I was going to say, that would give you anxiety.
So you have, you're safe and you're not anxious right now?
No.
Good.
I'm good.
You have a calming effect on me.
Okay, well, I'm glad to hear that, and I hope I have it to a lot of other people, too.
Can
I think I stressed some people out, but...
Some people, but only your coworkers. can you just real quick give us an update on the stock market, the calming voice of Cairo Radio?
Yes. Okay, and just remember, it's long-term game here, right?
It's not
so you
a good
don't want
to
freak out.
Introduce this news.
Well, I'm just going to say that don't freak out because the market's closed, and it closed down 831 points today.
But like 12 that minutes ago, it was at 800.
No,
and
it's
then 12 seconds before that, it was at 700. Now it's on.
Yeah, it's down by just over 3%. NASDAQ down 315. S&P 500 down by 94.
Do yourselves a favor and don't check your 401ks today. Just stay away.
And again, as CBS's business analyst Jill Schlesinger will tell us, you always have to look long term. And it's been doing pretty well.
Oh, what does she know? Long-term nonsense.
Hey,
look at the short
I'm trying
term
to help
only.
Calm everybody.
Everyone will be fine because they've decided to go with our sponsor, the Online Trading Academy. You can text me, by the way, at 98973. Meanwhile, remember when progressives got all crazy that President Trump had said illegal immigrants were voting in insane amount of numbers? And everyone said, and I think rightfully at the time, okay, you don't really have the data to back it up. You might have some concerns that are legitimate we need to look up. But let's not get into this conspiracy side. But that's what the left said, that it was a big conspiracy. You're just trying to create a perception that we've got a bigger problem that we actually have. There's no evidence whatsoever. Donald Trump, shut your face. Well, okay, it's weird because now Hillary Clinton is back in the news. I honestly don't know why. And I've got a whole bunch of audio from Hillary Clinton, but it's my understanding that if you play too many clips of her back to back, you turn to sand or stone. And so I've decided to only play one clip of her. And she is just diving in to the spotlight to push a whole bunch of conspiracy theories, from Republicans suppressing votes to not having secure ballot boxes. Here she is with Christiane Amanpour of CNN.
We have more voters who favor Democratic candidates. One of the tragedies of what's happened in our electoral system is the Republicans have systematically suppressed voters. Probably as many, Christiane, as 12 million voters were purged by Republican governments.
I mean, technically that's not true, because it's also, and I know exactly what she's referring to, was also done by Democratic governments. And of course, the context has to do with the fact that they were taking people off of the books because they hadn't voted and probably moved. And then when they reached out to them to find out, hey, are you still at this address? Could you please just send back this note? That's what happened in Ohio. And they didn't do it, so they removed some voters. Oh my gosh, though, it makes it sound like it's such a big problem that, by the way, only the Republicans are getting involved in, if we ignore the fact that Democrats are doing that too.
In states between 2012 and 2016, we have all kinds of questions about the security of our voting machines.
Are we going back to that whole thing of like the Bushes are involved? George Bush, the Bush family, they paid to change all the ballots. And then the Russians, they're getting involved too. Remember Bill Nelson about a month ago? He's the incumbent Democratic senator from Florida who's in a tough race right now with Rick Scott, the governor there, the Republican. He said, I've got this information that the Russians have hacked into our system. And then like the actual Homeland Security folks and the FBI were like, there's no evidence to suggest that at all. But let's continue to push these conspiracy theories, Hillary.
So we know that Democrats have to turn out in even bigger numbers in a lot of congressional districts and states to be successful, because they're being, pushed back by a headwind that is trying to prevent them or discourage them from voting. But if Democrats and I
people see through this transparent strategy, right? I'm just double checking.
Not only include Democrats, I include Republicans who are worried about the direction of this administration, independents who want to see more accountability. If they show up, we should win.
Okay. I have a question, and anyone can answer this, and you can text us at 98973, and Andrew will go through some of the responses, because I have a legitimate question. Okay. If the Republicans can only win when they cheat, why do they ever lose any elections? Do they lose some elections because they just want to make sure they don't get caught? Because you're telling me that we're purging a whole bunch of folks, specifically Democrats. We're just purging them. We're not allowing them to vote. Okay. I mean, we don't really hear from those people who claim that they were purged in any meaningful numbers, but let's just go with 12 million. And then you've got this whole idea of like hacking into the systems or changing some code behind the scenes by the evil, greedy Republicans who are in charge of the voting booths. Why do Republicans lose elections? And like in this whole last election, couldn't you give Donald Trump the popular vote just so we wouldn't have had to deal with the whole Electoral College debate? I'm just kind of curious. You're pushing this conspiracy that makes no sense. Because remember, the narrative that she's setting up here is Democrats always win. The only time Republicans win is when they do something dishonest, when they either cheat or steal the election. So why don't they cheat or steal every single time? Because there is a tight race right here in Washington State in 8th District between Dino Rossi and Kim Schreier. I mean, if we're going to cheat, can we cheat so that we make sure that the Dave Reichert seat stays red? I mean, just I'm trying to understand how people can seriously put out a conspiracy like this and not expect any pushback. Now, of course, she's talking on CNN with Christiane Amanpour. And you know you're not supposed to get in the face of Hillary Clinton because then she won't come back and talk to you anymore. They're friends. They're buddies. And so there was no significant pushback to any of these conspiracy theories. None of them whatsoever. And it seems to me that it seems obvious that it's just a ruse. This is an idea that they're putting out there because they want to get more Democrats to vote in this upcoming election, in the midterm election. Because they're looking at the polling. Hillary Clinton is looking at the polling numbers. Now, of course, she understandably dislikes President Trump. I totally get that. He's the one who beat her. So I don't think she's being petty in that. That's just a natural reaction. But she's looking at the polls. And she's seeing after this Kavanaugh debacle, the enthusiasm gap that the Democrats had on the Republicans, which was at some point 11 points, is now something like 2 points, which means it's statistically even. Which means Republicans are now just as excited as Democrats to vote in this midterm election. And they're excited because they saw what happened with Brett Kavanaugh. They didn't like it. And if you're a Republican, understand the reason why you vote for Republicans, particularly on a national scale when we're talking about the Senate or the presidency, you're doing that because you want to make sure that you have your say when it comes to the Supreme Court. And you guys, for a long time, the Republicans out there, kind of not really caring all that much. I looked at some of the results locally and looked at some of these races, like a Mark Harmsworth, who did not do as well as he should have in the primaries because Republicans weren't voting. You see, when you've got control of the House, the Senate, and the White House, you kind of coast along a little bit, right? You kind of coast. Oh, you got this. It's not as urgent anymore. And the Democrats, especially under someone like President Trump, who they loathe, who they'll stop at nothing to get in the way of, they're super pumped. That changed. That changed. And that's making people like Hillary Clinton nervous because she understands that if she doesn't get out enough people to vote, especially in certain states, in certain districts, the Democrats are not going to do as well as they think. And right now, if the election were to be held, I believe that, yes, the Democrats are going to take control of the House. I haven't really changed my view on that. I certainly don't think it's going to be a blue wave. We're pretending it's going to be a blue wave because that's a really good narrative for the Democrats to push because that gets the base even more excited, which means they're going to vote, not sit this one out. But in the Senate, man, look at the Senate. There's going to be a significant pickup for the Republicans. I think they're going to pick up in Florida. I think Rick Scott wins. I think Heidi Heitkamp, the Democrat from North Dakota, I think she loses. I think in Indiana, you might have a shot for the Republican. I don't think you have a shot in West Virginia. But of those four, I'm thinking at least two, maybe three. That's a significant pickup. You know what that means the next time that President Trump needs to put up a judge for the Supreme Court if there's another vacancy in the next 2 years? It means you're not going to have to rely on a Susan Collins or a Jeff Flake to move over because the Republicans who would win in those states, these are Republicans. These aren't wishy-washy Republicans. These are hardcore Republicans. That's good for the Republican Party. And I think there is a realization now with the electorate that, oh, I guess this stuff does matter. I guess we should be a little bit paying just a little bit more attention to all of this. And then finally, just because I like when things like this happen, have you ever been a talk show host who's interviewing someone and you're setting them up for a question because you know they're about to just slam on someone you don't like? I've totally been there. And I've totally set people up with those questions. And you know what the worst thing in the world is? when they answer it in the exact opposite way that you had intended them to answer the question. And then you kind of look like a fool. And then the audio and the video gets picked up on all of these different websites across the country. Because that's what happened with Andrea Mitchell over at MSNBC. She was talking to a historian, Michael Beschloss. He's got a new book out. And she wanted to use him to debunk a claim that President Trump has made in various rallies, various speeches across the country.
Well, the book is Presidents of War, and it's extraordinary. It is compelling.
She didn't read the book because she's busy. She didn't read the whole book. I think some intern gave her some notes, but she didn't read it.
Bring it to life. One quick question, one quick fact check. The president has been saying that Abraham Lincoln was criticized for the Gettysburg Address at his rallies in defending his own ability to, for history to prove that he will surmount the criticism. Was he criticized?
Yes.
Yes. She wasn't expecting that answer.
He was criticized for the Gettysburg Address by newspapers that hated Lincoln and wanted to support his opponent the next year when he ran for re-election. Not too unusual, but there were huge numbers of newspapers who understood Lincoln and even at that moment knew that Gettysburg Address would be a great document in American history.
So it wasn't all fake news?
There was not all fake news.
No, you big dummy. And by the way, I love there was a little bit of a passive-aggressive tone in his response. Yeah, there were lots of newspapers that did that. How do you not know that? How'd you not know that? She couldn't look. I guess she didn't read the book. I guess she probably forgot to read that chapter of the book. I'm Jason Rantz. I'm filling in for the Dory Monson Show. That has been the Fastest 15. Welcome back to the Dory Monson Show on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. I am Jason Rantz, filling in. When Kolion Noir of NRA TV visited Seattle, he was struck by two things. Number one, the city's beauty, and number two, the city's shocking homelessness problem, fueled in large part by an out-of-control drug addiction problem the city is frankly ignoring instead of fighting. Kolion Noir is an attorney, he's a gun rights activist, and he's the host of Noir on NRA TV, and he joins me this morning. Good morning, Kolion.
Hey, how's it going?
It's going well. I'm so curious, what drew you to exploring the issues of Seattle, particularly on homelessness, for NRA TV?
Well, from a 30,000 foot view, I've been doing my show Noir for we're in our seventh season now, and the show is a kind of an exploration of the gun culture in America from the viewpoint of a millennial such as myself. While at the same time addressing, you know, different cultural issues that come into play as well. And so what we decided to do with this season was to kind of, we've talked about the issue of firearms at large for the last six seasons. What we hadn't done was really explored what could be the sources for a lot of some of the violence and the crime that we end up seeing in a lot of cities that are inherently anti-gun. And yet these issues still persist. So we've gone to places like Southside Chicago, we've gone to St. Louis, and a lot of other different places that have a very particularized issue or problem that may or may not have to do with firearms or not. So it's kind of our exploration as to see which came first, the chicken or the egg. And if maybe addressing those particularized issues would do more to alleviate a lot of the problems violence-wise and crime-wise in those cities, more so than over-focusing or trying to scapegoat, which I feel a lot of the politicians in these places do, scapegoat the issue on gun control. And so Seattle came up as a way. Had a good friend of mine who talked to me about some of the epidemic issues that were going on with respect to the drug issue and homelessness. I actually have a couple friends out there in Seattle that live there as well. And so I said, okay, well, why don't we go out there and explore that issue? And we did. I didn't know very much about Seattle, honestly, prior to this. I grew up listening to Nirvana, so that's about as much of a connection I had to Seattle. But other than that, I was largely surprised when I got there. The most I knew about it was the pervasive overcast, which I'm a weird guy who tends to like overcast weather.
Yeah.
So I was kind of looking forward to that in a weird way. But immediately I noticed from a 30,000 foot view, quite literally upon landing, so to speak, how beautiful the city was. However, when I got there on the ground, the view started to change a little bit as you kind of started paying attention to some of the surroundings and what was going on. And the drug issue becomes very apparent. And I was a bit surprised, to be honest with you.
Well, it's funny you say that, because on the one hand, you know, the expectation going into anything that's hosted by NRA TV is that the focus is going to be on the guns. And the issue with Seattle is we don't really have a gun violence problem here. We've got some minor gang issues, and they're tragic when it happens, but we're not having that big of an issue when it comes to guns. And yet that's what Seattle politicians are almost exclusively focused on. And yet we've got this drug epidemic. We've got this homelessness problem that seems to be enabled by the city government.
Absolutely, which is incredibly odd to me in some ways, but then not in others. The gun issue is an incredibly easy issue to scapegoat very complex issues on. If I'm a politician who's running for re-election, and I want to have the viewpoint of being somebody who's fighting to stop the issues or crimes in a particular city, it's very easy for me to stand on gun control, because no matter what, you can always ask more of it without actually fixing anything.
Yeah, exactly.
And then allowing everything else to kind of fall by the wayside.
Well, it goes way beyond that, this whole idea of, okay, we've got this problem. Now, the problem is overstated, but if you pass this bill, we're going to tackle this problem in a meaningful way. And then there are a lot of people who are maybe on the fence about gun rights, and they say, okay, it makes sense to me emotionally that we should have universal background checks for everyone. So we vote yes on that.
Absolutely.
And then the stats don't go anywhere. The stats stay remarkably stagnant because it's not a big issue to begin with, but they're still there. So then they say, okay, you trusted us this one time. Come with us one more time with this new initiative that will ban, you know, assault weapons, whatever that even means in the context of the conversation. And people just continue to go down that path.
Yep. Yep, absolutely. And I've always said that, too, about the idea of, for instance, the universal background checks. People usually think that the universal background checks is a kind of a bit of a benign issue in the sense of it doesn't do any harm to individuals who are pro-Second Amendment. And I say, not necessarily, because as you pointed out, we start off with a universal background check, and then from there it turns into, well, we did a universal background check, but we can't quite enforce it without a national registration of all firearms.
Yeah.
And so it's like, okay, well, then what's wrong with the registration? And then next thing you know, we have a registration. The next thing you know, we have confiscation. I think people tend to undervalue the war of attrition that's being had when it comes to the Second Amendment. And I think you laid it out pretty blatantly how that happens. And then people tend to follow emotionally down that hole without even asking any questions, but then still find themselves in the same circumstance of which these policies were supposed to address.
Just joining me, I'm talking with Kolion Noir of NRA TV. He's just recently did his season, a series of videos on YouTube, which you can get them. Just check out NRA TV on YouTube. Having to do specifically with the homelessness issue in Seattle. And so let's talk about that, because, you know, part of what you do here is you don't necessarily get in. You're not doing combative interviews with people you disagree with or
no.
I perceive you to disagree with. You kind of let them tell their stories. And as you spoke to some of these folks who were on the side of what feels like just legalizing and managing heroin and heroin addiction, what was your impression?
Yeah. Okay, so initially going in, I've always had the mindset, and keep in mind, it was nothing I really explored in depth, but the idea of the distribution of needles, for instance,
yeah,
the needle exchange. I didn't really generally have a problem with that. I thought, you know what, it seemed like a pretty good idea. You know, it would help prevent the spread of diseases that result from IV drug use. Ironically enough, it's when I got to Seattle when I started kind of meeting with some of the individuals who run these needle exchanges and sitting down and having conversations with them. Something started to kind of irk me a little bit, because I'm like, well, it seems more like a needle dump more so than an exchange. It doesn't call for any type of accountability on the part of the users. What it says is, here, I'll just give you as many needles as you possibly want, and then you can just use them, dispose them at will, and then come and get some more. Well, what ends up happening is now it starts affecting people who live in the areas who are not users. Because now you have to deal with the idea of, okay, stepping on needles, kids stepping on needles, and things of that nature. So I went from being largely supportive of the idea to not so really being supportive of the idea. Now, the whole purpose of my show is not necessarily to be combative, even though I disagreed with a lot of some of the stuff that was being said. But like you said, I wanted people to tell their sides of it and get both perspectives on the issue and allow the audience to then walk away with a very informed idea of what is going on in Seattle so that they can see that for themselves and have as much information as possible without me kind of swaying it with my own bias. personally, like I said, at this point now, the way the needle exchange are being run, at least in places that I, with the people I spoke with, I'm not really a big fan of it because I think it does more harm than it does good.
And there's never really this idea of going after the root causes of the addiction or the root causes of homelessness. A city agency just said, hey, look at the data. Our agency that we're now judging is doing a really good job because we've offered services to people. And I look at that and I say, well, congratulations, you're offering services, but are they getting off of the services that you're offering?
Exactly. And they're not. But I've always pointed out when you start talking about, And I try to be fair with the idea of, you know, with respect to the gun issue, there are liberal gun owners and as well, but I've never actually really met a conservative anti-gunner. But when you start dealing with a lot of the more left-leaning politicians, the solutions are always more government. That's always the solution.
Yeah.
And in turn, what that means is they benefit more from keeping you on these policies and these social programs more so than they do getting you off of them. Because that basically creates this idea where they have to do, where you have a continued dependency on the government in order to facilitate whatever it is that you need. And so when you point out the idea of, yeah, we've provided all these services, but yet people, you create such a condition that forces them to continue to have to use them. And to me, that's not doing anybody any service. And so essentially what it's doing is enabling. And what I walked away from was a lot of enabling of using drugs more so than trying to actively mm-hmm. get people off of using drugs. And that was a bit interesting to me, and that kind of caught me off guard a little bit because I always thought the goal was to get people off of drugs, not to enable it.
Yeah, well, not at least not in Seattle. That's definitely not the goal. check out Kolion Noir on NRA TV. Again, it's available on YouTube. The name of the show is called Noir This Season, series of videos taking on the Seattle homelessness issue and how it sort of intersects with what the city is doing by going after guns. You can also learn more about him by going to MrKolionNoir.com. It's MrKolionNoir.com. Kolion, it's been a pleasure speaking with you. I hope we can have you on again in the coming
Absolutely.
Weeks as we try to defeat this anti-gun initiative here in Washington State. Thank you so much for coming on.
Man, absolutely. Thank you for having me. Really appreciate it.
Absolutely. You're listening to The Dory Monson Show on 97.3 FM, Cairo Radio. I'm Jason Rance, filling in for Dory. We're back after this. Welcome back to The Dory Monson Show. I am Jason Rance, filling in for Dory. We're live in the Carter Subaru studio. If you want to join the conversation, you can send me a text on the Online Trading Academy text line at 98973. And if you like the show I'm doing, I do it earlier in the morning every single day, 6 to 9, on AM 770 KTTH and 94.5 FM on the Greater East Side. Now, we're working on a story, and we're going to bring it to you in the next hour. I just want to tease it. Is that okay? Can I just tease it? Because I'm hoping we can actually find the audio associated with this, and we found the audio. Because it would be a mistake for us to talk about it if there's audio available and not play the audio. Here's my tease. It involves Pam Roach and the F word. And if history repeats itself, this is going to be the best story of the day. It's going to be a story that we're going to be talking about for months and months on end until the next time she does exactly the same thing. And so we're going to talk about it in the next hour. Do not miss it. How's that for a tease? Because anyone who understands Pam Roach and her ability to go off the cuffs and start to scream and yell and cuss, you know it's going to be a great story. But before that, I have to talk to you about a flight from Florida to Ohio, and it's a flight that we would not normally talk about because who cares about people who go from Florida to Ohio? This is a Washington show. This is a Western Washington-based show. But this flight was delayed nearly 2 hours yesterday because a woman tried to fly with her emotional support animal. Now, what's the problem? We're allowed to bring emotional support animals on board these flights. This is a Frontier Airlines flight, and the truth is because of this issue, they were 2 hours later than scheduled to leave, but it's Frontier Airlines and they're late all the time anyway. So what's the big deal? Oh, the lady tried to bring a squirrel that didn't appear to be in a cage onto the plane as her emotional support squirrel. This is according to WKYC. When she arrived for flight 1612, they say the unidentified woman revealed that the support animal that she had cleared ahead of time was actually a squirrel, which is not allowed on the airline. You see, Frontier Airlines, they allow you to bring a cat or a dog, which is different than Alaska Airlines, which said you can bring your little miniature horse. Tried to bring a squirrel, and they were all like, yeah, you can't do that. It's a rodent. It's just a rat with a longer tail. Let's not do that. And so she refused to leave. And so cops had to show up at Orlando and removed her on the way out. And I can confirm that this is what happened because I saw lots of people Snapchatting it. She's just flipping everybody the bird as they're wheeling her out of the plane. I have a hot take, if that's okay, if I could. I know this is Dory Monson show, and it's, you know, Jason Rance's hot take. If you need a service animal of any kind that we're going to call a emotional support animal, you shouldn't be on a plane. Because the truth is, there's nothing that that animal's going to do to calm you down, because it's not natural being in the air, 35,000 feet up, in this flying tube. We're not supposed to be in that. This is not natural. You're not going to be comforted because you got the little puppy with you. The puppy's adorable, and I'd like to play with the puppy, but of course I'm not allowed to touch any of the emotional support animals without you getting all upset, which, by the way, is just torturous to me. But if you can't fly without it, take the bus, take a train, take a boat, do something else. If you can't fly without an emotional support squirrel, this is no longer about like the quirky person who just needs a little extra help. Like, there's that line of the quirky person who likes to talk to animals and the straight up, like, you're a crazy person who should stay away from my friends and family kind of deal. And I feel like squirrels, that's crossing that bar. Can you just imagine just a crazy woman with a squirrel on a plane? Because I'm already in the position that when you bring dogs on, or God forbid, a miniature horse, Alaska Airlines, really? What about like the people who are also on the plane who don't want the dog pooping in the middle of the aisle? Like, is that okay? Like, can we all, without offending you, without offending your delicate sensibilities, can we all say that maybe not all of us, even though we may like animals, we don't really want to fly with them? I don't want to fly with kids. I'm forced to fly with kids. I have no say in that whatsoever. Can I have a say in something? Just like a small say? Like maybe the miniature horse? I don't really. What if you're in the seat next to the woman or the dude with the miniature horse? Now, granted, miniature horses are absolutely adorable, because I spent the morning looking up miniature horses, because this reminded me of the Alaska Airlines story that allowed for miniature horses. And they're so adorable. Did you know they're literally like little horses that are mini? They're literally a mini horse. They're so cute. And it's weird because I find normal horse-sized horses, they're just ugly and weird. And yet the little mini one, they're so adorable. 98973 if you want to text us. I highly, highly, highly recommend you stick around. Because Pam Roach and the F-bomb, yeah, that's a story you're going to want to hear about. I'm Jason Rance, filling in for Dory Monson.